this episode of The Commercial Break.
Mm-hmm. We're too dumb to know.
Yeah.
We're too dumb to care. We don't care because, you know, Patty Cake 11707 just put out another reel that I like about kitty cats. Or my favorite streamer's getting arrested for, you know, a little pot in his pocket. I mean, it's unbelievable. Well, listen, it's, you know, I don't have the answers. I wish I had the answers. I don't have the answers. Chrissy has the answers, but she won't tell me. Jeff's been giving her the secrets. Jeff's in the 1%.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
Oh, yeah, cats and kittens, welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Green. This is my dear friend and the co-host of this show, Chris and Joy Hoadley. Best to you, Chris.
Best to you, Brian.
And best to you out there in the podcast universe. I had just me. I wanted to bring you into the group, too, on the camera.
I know, I saw
that. Yeah, I don't like you, so I'm taking you out. Goodbye, Chrissy. Hi, Chrissy.
I'm back.
There you are. Hi.
Hi.
I have been fascinated by this Louvre thievery that happened, the Louvre, if you don't mind, the battleground of good and evil, when Tom Hanks did it. Remember when Tom Hanks did that movie and it all ended at the Louvre?
Yeah, that was the treasure, or what was that, Dan Brown?
Yeah, the Dan Brown novels.
Yes.
The,
The Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code.
Yes.
I wanted to say the Darjeeling Limited Adventures, which is a title that I completely made up all cloth. That's fun. But this Louvre thievery is very interesting.
It happened. Very.
I mean, you had to have been sleeping under a rock not to hear about this, but it happened in broad daylight back
so
in October.
Wild. So bold.
Very bold. And they broke into what they understood to be one of the lesser secure areas of the Louvre. The Louvre is two city blocks. It's not like one building.
We were talking about that.
Yeah.
You enlightened me on that because I didn't realize how huge it was.
It's gigantic. I mean, you can go look on Google Earth or Google Maps and you can see just how big it is. The courtyard in and of itself is, you know, the size of a small city park. It really is.
Well, and it's a former palace, right?
It's a former palace, but then it's been like glommed onto. Mm-hmm. When you enter the Louvre, you enter through the pyramid. You go down an escalator, very long escalator, and you go into a central lobby that in and of itself is very large. And then you pick which small section of one of the five wings of the building you're going to visit in the next 24 hours, because it's impossible to see even 5% of it in a day. It is so incredibly large. There are so many things to see there.
Yeah.
So much art. The Egyptian wing, of course, is probably one of the more popular ones. That's where I spent a good majority of my time. You can see the Mona Lisa there. There's so much art. Billions of dollars. Maybe even, like, I don't know. Maybe it's priceless. Maybe the amount of art in there is priceless. It rivals the Vatican, though I imagine the Vatican has a lot more art that's much more valuable. I've been there, too. That's incredible also.
Yeah,
that's also very large. It's the smallest country in the world. But in and of itself, the Vatican is crazy. The amount of wealth that's just dripping off of that place is insane.
I know.
And then you think about the immense power that the Pope and the Catholic Church have had on this earth for so many years. And you start to feel like you're in a Dan Brown novel. You're like, holy shit, this is not a conspiracy theory. This is real shit.
That's pretty crazy. I remember the part, too, that I enjoyed, because I'd been twice, once with my sister, and then the last time when Jeff and I
went. To the Louvre?
No, to the Vatican.
To the Vatican.
And then the part, too, that I really remember was, like, going down under and seeing those tombs. They've got the tombs of the, like, old popes down there.
They have some real live dead, dead popes.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been to Spain where they have, in churches, they have one of the saints. There's like a famous church north of Madrid in the north countryside where they have every town has a church. The church,
of course,
the cathedral style church, you know, this is probably older than anything in the United States. Beautiful, stained glass, everything original or, you know, updated, retouched, whatever it is. They take care of them. The Catholic Church, the church in general, takes care of them preciously because that's their real estate. And often it's very valuable because it is the town. It's the center of town. It's the focus of the town. They get millions of visitors at some of these churches every year, like in Barcelona and Madrid and all throughout the countryside in Spain. But one of these church, and so every time I go to Spain and we end up visiting the next town, you know, the next village, the next whatever, and I've been all around Spain, it is a point is made by the family that we have to go to the cathedral. You have to go to the church. That's what you do, because itself is a history lesson.
It is.
In and of itself, it is a living, breathing testament to human achievement, human corruption, human distrust.
I mean,
it's just history in general. And we went into one. And if you've ever been to one of these older cathedrals, you'll see that, and it's left in its kind of original state. You'll see, and I think Notre Dame is like this too, you'll see that they have the pews where people will sit, but then the bishops will sit in essentially a box in the middle of the church.
That's right.
That's closed off, really, to the rest of the church. And they have these huge, like, I don't know, I didn't even know, I don't know how to describe them, wood seats that box off the rest. Well, so we're walking around this, and I knew this is a famous church. I very rarely do I understand why when I walk in there. I'm not a historian. But we walk into one of these churches. There's hundreds of people that are there. We're kind of walking around the perimeter of the church. And then you walk down these stairs next to this box, these very old stone stairs. And you walk down, and there is a glass, piece of like long glass, like a transom. And you look in that transom, and no shit, one of the saints, a saint is entombed. And if I'm not mistaken, it's one of the apostles, I believe, is entombed in this fucking church. Now, the question is that really his old bones? Like roller old bones on down here? I don't know if those are really the old bones, or they're sitting in the Vatican somewhere and they've put something else there to pretend that it is, because it's so valuable. This wasn't like a heavily guarded church. They had security, of course. But then we've also been to the church in Valencia, where the Last Cup of Christ is supposedly. That was a weird experience also. So the Louvre is another one of these priceless, invaluable testaments to human art, human achievement, and quite frankly, the riches that are amassed on behalf of some people. The Louvre. These guys take a cherry picker in the middle of the day, right as the Louvre is opening. They take a cherry picker, they ride that cherry picker to a glass window, they jump in, they steal some extraordinarily valuable jewels, crowns.
Yeah, Napoleon, right? It was all related to Napoleon.
You might be right about that. That might be the Napoleon wing of the building, so to speak, or the Napoleon Hall, whatever you call it. And so they take all of this stuff. They're in, they're out, 7 minutes. Let me give you a little synopsis. October 19th, four thieves carried out a bold daylight raid in the museum's Galerie de Apollon, which is the houses of the French crown jewels. They arrived at 9:30 a.m. They used a truck with a lifting platform, what we know as a cherry picker, parked it outside, raised a few floors into a balcony, broke a window. Two perpetrators used power tools to break through the glass window. They smashed the display cases inside, grabbed eight pieces of historically significant jewelry, tiaras, necklaces, and earrings. They once belonged to French royalty, Queen Marie Amélie, Queen Hortense. One of those stolen items was a crown worn by Empress Eugenie that was later recovered outside the museum, but it was damaged, and the thieves fled on scooter and exited via the scene side of the facade onto the motorway. Within 4 minutes, they were in and out. Within 8 minutes, they were on the highway and gone.
The audacity and the fact that they got away with it, that they actually were able to do it.
They did it. Well, two of them were arrested recently on the 19th of October, so like a month ago. They were arrested trying to get out of the country at Charles de Gaulle. So they didn't get arrested. And the third one was arrested. So there's a fourth one that's out there. But, you know, the French police, first of all, you have to understand something about Paris if you've never been there. And I've driven into Paris, from outside Paris to inside Paris. Like, I've driven to Paris. When you go to Paris, doesn't matter how you get into Paris, you're being videotaped. Your picture's being taken. It's being taken by cameras on the roadways in multiple different places. Paris is high security. Like, they are really a police state at the end of the day. And I don't mean that. I'm trying not to mean that in a bad way, right? But it does feel a little creepy when you realize when you're driving down the highway and then there's multiple flashes in multiple different places, and you realize they're not taking a picture of your license plate like a lot of places do now. They're taking a picture of you. And the people inside of the car, and I imagine there's facial recognition software that's then identifying whether or not you mean them some harm or you're wanted. So just trying to get out of the city for these guys, I imagine was going to be a tall task without being recognized. But the moment that I heard about this, it made me think about the international gang of loosely affiliated thieves known as the Pink Panthers.
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't know, the Pink Panther, not only named after, appropriately named after the comedy movies, the Pink Panther, which at one point starred Steve Martin.
I love those
movies. Yeah. Was it Jean Clouseau? Was Jean Clouseau the Pink Panther?
Jacques
Clouseau? No, not Jacques Cousteau. Jean Clouseau. That's Jacques Cousteau. Jacques Cousteau.
He was in movies too.
And his pet turtle.
Yeah. He was the Explorer.
Pink Panther. Oh, the pink belugan whale. They are known as the Pink Panthers, and for the last couple of decades, they have been wreaking havoc in the most friendly of ways across Europe, mainly across Europe.
Yes.
Now, what do we know about the Pink Panthers? Let me explain a little bit about the Pink Panthers. It's a group of very slick jewel thieves, essentially, is what they are. They target places by doing a lot of homework and looking like people who are meant to be there. High fashion, well-dressed, well-educated. They look like they fit the scene wherever they are. And that's usually some high street somewhere. And they've done, you know, it's been in Paris. High street. That's what they call it. Look at me. I'm one step closer to becoming a UK citizen.
Fancy? Is that?
Yeah, fancy.
Yeah,
fancy, classy. Like yes. High street is the fancy street, right? The place where you go and you know what it is. It's Rodeo Drive, essentially,
right.
In whatever town. This has been in Paris and in the UK and all throughout Eastern and Western Europe. They have done this. They pick a jewelry store where they think they can get away with a lot of jewels in a short amount of time. And they use manners and fear rather than bullets and violence. That's what they're known for. They walk in, they get in, they get out in usually less than a minute or two. They steal millions and millions of dollars worth of jewels, and they do it with the precision of a military operation or like a Secret Service CIA operation. They're named the Pink Panthers because of the movies, but then also because it's kind of comical that they're able to do it, get away with it so quickly, and very rarely has anybody been hurt. I think one person has been killed in the entire time they have been doing this. And who are these people? Well, a lot of people believe that they are former Serbian military operators that got together, and they are loosely associated, right? But all the money filters up to whomever it filters up to, probably some kind of organized crime. But then there's multiple people involved. Maybe they, you know, a couple of them do a couple heists over a couple of years, and then the next group takes over, or they switch and they intermingle. This is real Ocean's 11 type shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, that reminds me of Ocean's 11.
And they have not been caught. None of them have been caught. They have never been caught, which is unbelievable.
I know.
International network of jewel thieves, probably from the Balkans, Serbia, Montenegro, Bosnia, Croatia, who have pulled off hundreds of robberies since the early 2000s. They were coined by Interpol after a 2003 London heist where a stolen diamond was hidden in a jar of face cream, just like the movie. Have you ever seen the movie with Peter Sellers?
Yeah,
that's what
happens.
He sticks the big, whatever, the crown jewel inside of face cream. It's estimated that they have hauled in over $500 million worth of jewels. They're stylish, they're fast, and they're surgical, just as I described. They favor daylight raids, precision timing, and a movie-level getaway tactics, often in under 2 minutes. No violence, just speed, coordination, using pure, you know, tactics. That's it. That's what they do. Sometimes they drive cars into buildings, and then, you know, they'll smash, grab, and then they'll have getaway cars, and they're
ready
off.
To go.
Yeah, and then they've been known to move from one getaway car to the next getaway car to the third getaway car. And by the time the police even get to the scene, they're four getaway cars into it, and they're never going to be caught because they're just that good. So
former military would make sense.
Yes. Okay, you want to hear about a few of their heists?
I do.
All right, 2001. This is kind of when the birth of this legend starts. They stole a diamond worth over $500,000 from a Mayfair jeweler. Police found it hidden in a pot of face cream. Interpol then coins them the Pink Panthers. Mm-hmm. So then in a pair of nearly identical daylight robberies in Paris, they stole over $10 million worth of diamonds in under 2 minutes.
God.
In under 2 minutes. They used wigs. They had makeup. They had no firing of any gun. Uh-huh. They walked in. They smashed. They grabbed. They got out. And they were calm. And that's what I've watched some video on, like people who are investigating these guys, like 60 Minutes and 60 Minutes mm-hmm. Australia and some other investigative journalists in the BBC, every one of the people at Interpol or the different agencies that are investigating them all comment, there's almost like a certain amount of respect for these guys.
Yeah, I can see
because
that.
They're calm and professional.
Mm-hmm.
They're not screaming and yelling like, you know, you see in the United States, these guys, they go in and smash and they grab and they cause chaos and they usually get caught because they're being dumb about it. Right. Not these dudes. These dudes take this. This is like a job. They're going to work. They know what they're going to do. They're going to do it. And they're going to do it quickly. And then they're going to move on and get away. And I don't have respect for the jewel thievery part of it, but it's kind of cool. It's kind of fucking cool, right?
Yeah. Well, it's like a movie. I mean, you're picturing George Clooney at this point.
That's right. In 2005 in Geneva, Switzerland, they pulled off an $8 million robbery near Lake Geneva. Uh-huh. Never been to Switzerland. I've been to Geneva. They have a huge lake called Lake Geneva. So it's mm-hmm. right in Geneva. Lake Geneva is conveniently located in Geneva. Picture perfect scenery, just as you would imagine.
I've seen pictures are beautiful.
The mountains behind it, mm-hmm. crystal clear water. I mean, it's really weird for a lake. It's, you know, blue water. And then you could take a boat ride on it. But if you take a boat ride around Lake Geneva, around the city of Geneva, this outskirts of Geneva, the amount of wealth that is sitting up in those mountains, that is sitting in that city, is disgusting and classy. It's like, if you have old money, this is what you do with old money. You go to Lake Geneva, and then you just kind of chill out, right? But there are diamond shop, after jeweler.
Right, it's like an Aspen.
Oh, Aspen, but 600 years older.
Sure.
They've been there for a minute. They know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. In Dubai, two Audi sedans smash through the glass in the doors of the Wafi Mall, four masked men loot the Graff Jewelry store. Less than 88 seconds, they make out with $20 million in jewels. That's insane.
I know.
Saint-Tropez, France. Yep. Robbers dressed as tourists stroll in and take $6 million worth of jewels. They flee on speedboats. Because, why not? Let's throw boats
there
in the mix.
Yeah.
Milan, Italy, another Graff store, $7 million. They used smoke bombs to disorient the security, but they were non-toxic, so no one got hurt. Cannes, France. $136 million as they steal a suitcase full of gems from the behind-the-counter of a jewelry store. They knew what they were going in to do. 2014 through 18, there are dozens of copycats or connected robberies. And then there's sporadic Germany, Switzerland, and Balkans. These guys have never been caught, and it fascinates the fuck out of me.
Of course.
First of all, here's my question. What do they do with the jewel? They must obviously they have a network mm-hmm. of people that they must sell these to. And when you sell $136 million worth of retail value diamonds, you're not getting $136 million back. Mm-hmm. They're stolen. You have to get rid of them. Diamonds these days have barcodes just like every other thing on earth. They can be tracked and traced.
Do they?
Yes. My brother just bought his engagement mm-hmm. ring, and the guy showed him the IDC, the International Diamond Charge, or whatever it was.
Okay.
He put a magnifying glass, like a super magnifying glass, down to the bottom of the diamond. He had it in that little, the little forceps or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And he showed the barcode, essentially, for the diamond. Wow. It was traced. It can be tracked and insured. And so if someone else steals it and puts it in another ring, if you were ever to find the ring that somebody had, you would be able to track and trace that particular diamond to where it was sold, how the chain of custody. And the guy was telling us at the diamond store, he's like, this is how all of this is done now.
Yeah, well, it makes sense.
When a guy comes in with a bag full of diamonds, yeah. When my guy comes in with a bag full of diamonds, you know, I imagine for some reason, I imagine a Hasidic Jew come, and I don't mean that, it's just what I imagine when I think of those New York jewelers, you know,
right,
yeah, coming in with the bag of diamonds, yeah, and then just like rolling them out on a table and you're looking at them, mm-hmm. You exchange the diamonds and then you write down the serial numbers and you know, whatever you do. I don't know what the fuck you do something.
You write down the serial numbers.
But when you're stealing these kind of jewels, they're either probably raw diamonds or old enough to not carry this kind of.
They didn't have
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the fact that these Pink Panthers know what they're stealing. They know what they're stealing.
They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. This is not a random smasher grab. This is not a couple of, you know, fucking 26-year-olds who think they're going to be the next, you know, I don't know, the guys from The Town. What was that Ben Affleck movie, The Town, where they're shooting up the...
I saw The Town.
You didn't see The Town?
Mm-mm.
Or Ben Affleck, they have that big shootout at the end at at Fenway.
Okay.
Where they rob Fenway after one of the games because all the cash is downstairs. Oh, it's a great movie. It's a fantastic movie. But this is not that. This mm-hmm. is not like, you know, a bunch of, and those guys were professionals too, but they got caught. Just in case you haven't seen the movie yet, I'll ruin it for you. They get caught.
Is it a true story?
It's not a true story. No, I wish it was a true story, but it'd be a lot cooler if it was. But this is a true story. Where do these diamonds go? How do they get there? When people do international art heists, which is another thing that happens all around the world all the fucking time, where do they go?
Mm-hmm.
Who gets them? Like, if you steal a Monet or a Rembrandt or the Mona Lisa, whatever. If you which, by the way, you know the only reason why the Mona Lisa is really famous? It's because it's been stolen a number of times and it's made international news.
Oh, right.
So that's why the Mona Lisa became this famous painting, is because it was traded hands between thieves and original owners. And it just kind of like got this lure, the allure of a painting. I mean, when you go see the Mona Lisa, I'm going to be honest with you. It's not super impressive. It's just not impressive. Unpopular opinion. The Mona Lisa to me was not impressive. I didn't feel some kind of like autistic overwhelm about the Mona Lisa.
Right,
no,
right.
The most valuable painting in the world. It looked like more like a postage stamp. It was really small. It was kind of puny. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay. All right. That's the Mona Lisa. There you go. And people are,
oh, well, yeah.
They're clamoring to get a picture with it next to it. You can't actually stand next to it, but where does this stuff go?
I think there's a whole black market mm-hmm. then for it, because I was reading about a painting heist and another book. And yeah, there's like a whole underground black market.
Like there's people who want them. They'll put it in their house.
Mm-hmm.
They'll hang it in their house and they don't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of pissing in the wind of the high market, the high art market.
Right, like all Russian oligarchs,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. I mean, it's, mafia, whatever. It's the people of the underworld.
The art in the collectible market, like, and the jewel market is out of sane. It's an insanely corrupt mm-hmm. and crazy thing. When you scratch the surface, I think most of us think about art and we're like, yeah, in a museum or a nice painting in someone's home, or this person collects art or that person collects art. When you really start scratching the surface about art and jewelry, it's insanely connected to everything terrible in this world. Insanely connected. I'm not saying
all of it. I think a lot of money laundering goes on through it.
Of course it does. Mm-hmm. Of course it does. These paintings keep capturing more and more money. Art right now is on fire.
And they have those big, huge containers, right? At different points in the
ports.
In the U.S. Yep, at ports.
At ports.
Yeah.
You've seen the movie. What's the movie? Not Inception, but the other one. God damn it. I love it. It's a great movie. The one where they're all moving backwards. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Memento?
No, not Memento. The one that, hold on one second. the movie. after Inception. Excuse me.
No, I love that director, though.
Oh, God damn, dude. Why, this is like my favorite. this is my favorite director, Inception. My favorite director.
Nolan.
Christopher Tenet. Tenet. Okay. Tenet. So in the movie Tenet, they are in this facility at an international airport. You know, the one where they drive the plane through. Mm-hmm. Where Christopher Nolan actually drove a plane through an actual building to get that effect. That is a port. In that, like this, like a safe house essentially for fine art, jewels, yeah, and anything else that's extremely valuable that is free from taxation because it doesn't officially enter the country. Mm-hmm. It's like
that's
this
right.
No man's
get
land.
Yeah,
and these are becoming very popular for people to put their jewels. And when they talk about all the security, like if someone breaks in, then carbon monoxide fills the room and you'll be dead or passed out in 12 seconds. These kind of security measures are in place and it's real. It's fucking real.
Yeah, it is.
That this happens. And these are becoming more and more popular. They're proliferating throughout the... I cannot talk today. Thank you. You know, you have those days when you wake up,
yes,
and your brain's moving, but your mouth's not?
Yes.
It's one of those days. But of course, I do this for a living. So I'm bound to have one of these every once in two episodes. I'm bound to have one of these every Tuesday.
Right.
So these things are all around the world, and they are safe houses for some of the most crazy, expensive shit ever.
And some people don't even, I mean, what I've read is that some people, like, you know, buy it at auction or whatever and then just
ship it to one of those places.
Ship it to one of those places.
That's it.
It never sees the light of day.
Never sees the light of day. It's taken care of by a bunch of nameless, faceless people. It's just for money. It's just a way to exchange value. And that's, when you think about it, that's what money is. Money is the exchange of energy. And sometimes you put that energy into a thing, and then you can exchange that energy later on down the road. It's a safe house. And the way that the art market has exploded lately, it's absolutely insane. I want to talk about it a little bit more. Let's take a break because...
Yeah, I love this.
I don't know when we go streaming, so all of a sudden we go like, we have like 40-minute segments. Why
I know
that?
We did. We do.
We were so good at sticking to like 15 to 20-minute segments, and now we're doing three-hour episodes. I became Joe Rogan after I went on Twitch.
On streaming.
Yeah, with no one watching.
We got two. Three.
Oh, two. Hey! Hey! Good to see you. We'll be back.
Hey, it's Rachel, your new voice of God here on TCB. And just like you, I'm wondering just how much longer this podcast can continue. Let's all rejoice that another episode has made it to your ears, and I'll rejoice that my check is in the mail. Speaking of mail, get your free TCB sticker in the mail by going to tcbpodcast.com and visiting the Contact Us page. You can also find the entire commercial break library, audio and video, just in case you want to look at Chrissy, at tcbpodcast.com. Want your voice to be on an episode of the show? Leave us a message at 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. Tell us how much you love us, and we'll be sure to let the world know on a future episode. Or you could make fun of us. That'd be fine, too. We might not air that, but maybe. Oh, and if you're shy, that's okay. Just send a text. We'll respond. Now I'm going to go check the mailbox for payment while you check out our sponsors, and then we'll return to this episode of the commercial break.
Okay, they're called free ports, is what they're called.
Free ports.
I'm sorry,
right.
I forgot the name, but I looked it up and they're
port.
Called.
You had port, right?
What's that?
You
I did. Port. I had port, yeah. And so there's a couple of them. They're Geneva, Delaware, Thailand, Bangkok. There's a number of these. And basically what they are is they are stuffed in ports or international airports where essentially they are their own no man's land. Mm-hmm. They can't be taxed by any particular country because they never touch any particular country technically. So these free ports have been around. The Geneva one has been around since the late 70s, early 80s. And according to my research, ChatGPT, some of this art has been there since its inception. No pun intended. It's been there the whole time. This is a place where the ultra rich store cash. Essentially, store valuables, isn't it? Not necessarily liquid, but it's cash. And the art market over the last 15, 20 years has gotten absolutely bonkers.
Exploded, yeah.
With guys from Saudi Arabia, UAE, Dubai, the Middle East, you know, billionaires.
China.
There's like a new billionaire every day arising in this universe, in this world that we're living in. And so there are hundreds, if not thousands, maybe tens of thousands of billionaires throughout the world, and they're all looking to put their cash somewhere safer than cash because, you know, that's what you do when you have like indispensable amounts of wealth. You have to spread that wealth out. You don't want to be a one-legged table, as we say here at the commercial break. You don't want to be a one-legged table. So they spread their wealth out and they put their valuables at these free ports where it can't be touched. It's very unlikely to be broken into because it's some of the most secure facilities in the world. You go in, you mean nefarious harm, you're dead. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. And by the way, since it's not a country, if you're dead, it's unlikely it'll be investigated by anybody of repute.
I didn't even think about that.
It's like being in international waters, right?
Yeah.
That's how it happens. And so these free ports are becoming very popular with the ultra rich. And so you'll buy a Rembrandt for $100 million, but you'll never see it. You would never dare put that in your house where someone can just come in and take it. You know, your house is probably the least secure place that you'll ever be if you're a billionaire. And this just fascinates me to no end because this is how...
You won't even get to enjoy it, though.
Listen.
I guess you just say you own it.
I like art, and I don't have $1 billion, so I will never know. It will never be in my purview to use a free port.
Right.
Right? I mean, I can only hope. I can only imagine. I can only imagine what it's like to have a free port or do a free port thing or even contact a free port for that matter. We should call a free port. Is there a free port? And I should ask them.
I think there's one in New York.
Do you? No, just Delaware.
Yeah, oh, Delaware.
Yeah, Delaware. I should
where
ask.
Everybody goes to start their companies.
Would you keep my Dick Tracy collection secure?
How much would it cost?
Hold on one second.
I am curious.
Do you have the phone number to the Delaware Freeport? Question mark.
I am curious as to how much it costs to store something in the Freeport.
Oh.
And I mean, I guess there's different sizes. It's kind of like a storage unit place, right? But for.
Yeah.
That's like ultra wealthy.
Yeah. Hold on one second. Tell me about the security measures at these Freeports. So I did find a phone number for the Delaware Freeport. Should I call them?
I think we should.
And ask them, what is the charge for keeping my Dick Tracy collection? Yes.
What's the going rate?
Yes. 24-hour CCTV. Oh, of course, right? Hundreds of cameras covering every angle. Access control by biometric entry only. That's iris scan, fingerprint, and possibly multi-factor.
That's wild. That's like in the movies, too, where you see people like cut off somebody's hand, you know, to use it.
To use it. Yeah, that's right. Take out your eyeball.
Yeah.
We're in Terminator now.
Yes.
We're Terminator. Take out your eyeball and scan it. Climate control, environment because of temperature and humidity, fire suppression systems, strict inventory and tracking, sound vibration sensors, motion sensors, irregularity sensors, limited access for any non-owner. If a non-owner wants to view or interact with an item, they have to be escorted under scheduled supervision and have to go through thorough reviews and security checks. Fences, walls, barbed wire, secure loading docks, controlled parking.
Lasers.
Yeah. And by the way, that's just the stuff that's publicly available.
Yeah.
You know that they have the most advanced security systems in the world. It's probably like White House level security, I would imagine. I wonder if it includes a gold sign that says Freeport. Hand painted by a 2-year-old.
Right. That you get off Etsy.
Freeport. That's right. I mean, listen, let me ask... how does a Freeport charge for housing an item? Question mark. We're all learning together on this one.
I would be curious.
Okay, and then I want to tell you about Selma Hayek.
Oh.
And how she fits into all of this.
Oh, I like her. Well, she's got an ultra wealthy husband.
Yes. So Geneva is expensive but discreet. Singapore is bond villain like facility that is known to be the most expensive.
Well, Singapore is like one of the most expensive cities in the world.
Yes, of course. They will charge you for everything from receiving an item to photographing it, cataloging it, moving it, opening it, resealing it, and sometimes even for just looking at it.
Really?
Yes. And they will charge you by the square foot to house something.
Uh-huh.
And they're not giving it's not going to give us dollar amounts, right? Oh, wait, no, here it does give you dollar amounts.
If you have to ask, you can't afford it.
$5,000 to $10,000 per foot per year.
Whoa.
Okay, so now let's think about that. Let's think about you get a 10 by 10 piece of art.
Uh-huh.
And then you have to take that 10 by 10 piece of art and you have to crate it and you have to weather control it and all that other stuff, right? So maybe you're taking up 100 square feet, right? Vertically, but maybe you're taking up 100 square feet. I'm sure that's how they charge. 100 square feet times $5,000. That's $7,000 per year, according to my math. That's 500 grand a year.
I know.
A year to house your Rembrandt. Holy shit. But I guess when you spend $100 million on it, what does it matter?
Pennies.
You're going to spend it, you won't even spend 1% of that for 2 years worth of housing. I mean, I guess. Damn. And it probably raises in value 4 or 5% every year.
Well, yeah.
So I got to imagine it's worth it. These Freeports are fascinating. I love
Very.
It. Where is the tour of the Freeport? I bet you don't have that on YouTube. Where, go, hey,
there's
Mr.
No.
Beast, get on it. Where are the fuck are you
They're
on these
Freeports?
They're not
letting you in.
Yeah, Mr. Beast can afford a Freeport. Where is that Freeport? Seriously, that's just insane to me that you charge that much. And then on top of that, that's just the charge for housing it. That's not the charge for doing anything special with it. Like if you have to rotate it or whatever every year, they'll probably charge you $30,000 because anytime they handle it, they are at liability. And the insurance they must carry in those places is probably, actually, maybe they don't even, maybe they're un. There's some corrupt insurance company that does that insurance. What is that, AIG or whatever, that huge insurance? Someone out there, Prudential,
I don't know. I mean, I guess, but also you as the individual who owns the art have it insured.
Oh, yeah. You have double secret insurance on stuff
you
like
do.
That. And who do you call for shit like that? I guess you call
There's a network of people. Yeah. That only the ultra wealthy
What's that
know?
Company in the UK that'll like insure your voice? Or your hands or your...
Lloyds of London.
Lloyds of London. You know, I talked to an insurance agent one time about getting life insurance.
Uh-huh.
And the guy pitched me vocal insurance.
Oh.
Because I was a podcaster.
Okay.
And I said, you don't understand this podcast. What do you think it's worth? $5 an episode? So Selma Hayek is here. How does Selma Hayek move into all this art dealing and jewel thievery and all this other stuff? Selma Hayek... Very famous Mexican actress who we all know and beautiful woman, and she's been in a lot of movies that I like. She is married to Francois Henri Pinault.
That's right.
The French businessman who heads up Gucci, Saint Laurent, and Balenciaga.
Balenciaga,
which has found themselves in a spot of bother lately.
Really?
Well, yes, because they have been... Some people find their promotion of their particular clothing lines to be skewed toward, I want to be very careful about how I say this because I don't know what the rules of Twitch are yet, but children. Like it's
very
not
young models.
Very young models, but very young models, like children models. And so there's been a lot of hubbub.
I did read about that, yeah.
Over the last couple of years about people wearing it and the famous people and all this other stuff, yada, 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 yada. But they also own an empire of art collection, art museums, and luxury goods. He owns one of the most famous and expensive, not only art portfolios in the world, but art dealers in the world. And there are a lot of these paintings that are sold to this top 1% are being trafficked, sold through his art dealership. And... Some people are observing that some of this art is also not super adult. Let's put it that way.
Oh, really?
Yes. One particular artist specifically, is kind of being targeted for the art that they do. Some of it can't even be shown on social media. Some of it you can see because it's art. It's not photographs necessarily, but it's just a little weird.
Is it a current artist or we're
baseline.
Talking from...
It's a current artist.
Okay.
And the paintings are trading for millions and millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. Kim K has some of this art. Mm. And if you look at some of this art, it's a little strange. It just
Speaking
is.
Speaking of stolen jewels, I was going to bring that up earlier. Remember she had that, she had like $1 million worth of jewels stolen from Paris.
She did. Right, like walking down the street,
room.
Right?
No, it was out of her hotel
Oh,
room.
That's right. Yeah. Who is the, Remember we saw that one video of the lady who was robbed of her jewels, like right on the, tried to be kidnapped off the street and her dad like got involved and he got almost died and the whole, anyway, this world is really weird. And I start looking into Selma Hayek when I'm doing some research for the Pink Panthers. I start looking into Selma Hayek, Gucci, all the, this guy, you know, Pinal, who's really like the wealthiest of the wealthy. I mean, aristocrat.
That would just be so fun.
Wealthy of the wealthy. is it fun, though, is my question. Because when I start looking into Pinal and I start looking into Selma Hayek, I start realizing just how connected they are to all of the other aristocrats, these extraordinarily wealthy Bezos, Musks, Epsteins of the world. And it really started to like, it started to make me realize that there is this crust on the top of our society right now that is largely driving the narrative, the conversations, the things we think about, the things
I was just reading something or listening to something the other day, and they were talking about all of these people that own, they own the media companies.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you think
so
for one second.
What we consume.
If you think for one second that Elon Musk bought Twitter because he is some champion of free speech.
No.
You're wrongheaded on this. Like Joe Rogan. Yeah, I've heard him say this before, you know, thank you, Elon, for buying Twitter. So now, you know, we can all say what we want to say. While I can appreciate that's an altruistic view on free speech, Joe, that's not why Elon bought Twitter. Elon bought Twitter because he can literally reach half a billion people with his iPhone. And that's why he bought Twitter. He can reach you. He can sway you. He can put his opinions out there in the world. He can literally move the earth left or right based on these conversations. Mm-hmm. He is very public about how he does this, as are a lot of people. Politicians, they're very public about how they do that. I'd say public meaning they're in public life. But then there's this whole upper crust that's not so public, like Pinal, who's moving billions of dollars worth of extremely valuable goods and services all around the world without any of us paying attention to any of it. But it has so much influence on our day-to-day lives, and we just don't realize it. It is not a conspiracy theory. It is a practical way of moving through life when you are that well-to-do. Right. You almost have to get in that game because you want to protect the – it's just natural to want to protect the things you have, to amass more, to play the games the other people in your circles are playing, to do the things that the other people in your circles are doing. And that includes owning media companies and fine art and trafficking in goods and services that are beyond comprehension in price, beyond comprehension in price. And the rest of us, no matter how hard we try, will unlikely reach that. It is nice to think about, but – yeah, you might have a couple million dollars in your bank account and have a nice boat in Miami and a condo here and a townhome there, but you're not going to be moving in the Pinal worlds. No. That's not going to happen. Or the Epstein worlds or any of that other stuff. The more that I read about these Epstein emails, the more I realize how interconnected all of it is. It's all interconnected. I'm not trafficking in conspiracy theory. It's plain English. In the emails and the text messages, he knew everybody. Everybody knew him. And he was moving the world the way that he wanted to move it because they were asking him for favors and he was doing them for him. It's insane. And when you are this rich and you can stuff your art and your shoes and your fine jewels and all the other stuff that's beyond priceless into a place where it'll never be taxed, never be touched, never be seen or heard from again, until a rainy day when you need it or passed on to your kin, whatever it is, then the game is rigged. The game is rigged.
It is,
I want to start a free port for people who are like lower middle class.
Right.
So I can take my $10 Target guitar and put it in there and charge like 6 cents a square foot per decade. You know what I'm saying? Oh, wait, that's called self-storage.
That's
called self-storage. I don't have to scan my retina when I go to Easy Store down the street. This is the way that it is. And art and jewels, I almost think of the Pink Panthers like Robin Hood a little bit. I'd like to think they're doing something good with that money somewhere. Somewhere along the line, there's it's probably going to some Serbian overlord.
Yeah, there's a whole underworld and black market for a lot of stuff. It's like, too, with the antiquities, you know, a lot of the stolen, you know, stuff from Greece or Italy or the Roman
or
Empire.
Egypt.
Yeah, Egypt. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all interconnected in some way, shape, or form. There's things going on out there, guys, that we just are not aware of. It's weird. And then yesterday.
Well, we're addicted to our TikTok. That's where we're living instead.
There it is. Mm-hmm. And there is the rub. The rub is, as long as we are interacting with this thing and watching Brian on Twitch, we're too dumb to know.
Yeah.
We're too dumb to care. We don't care because, you know. Patty
we'll
Cake 11707 just put out another reel that I like about kitty cats.
Yes.
Or my favorite streamer's getting arrested for, you know, a little pot in his pocket. I mean, it's unbelievable. Well, listen, it's, you know, I don't have the answers. I wish I had the answers. I don't have the answers. Chrissy has the answers, but she won't tell me. Jeff's been giving her the secrets. Jeff's in the 1%. Jeff flies privately.
I wish. Well,
once a year.
His boss
on his friend's
1%.
Plane. Yeah. Where's the rich guy when you need him? Yeah. I did meet him.
He took us
great.
To Pearl Jam.
He took us to Pearl Jam. He was a great guy. What's up with him?
Yeah. He's in Hawaii.
He's in Hawaii. We need you here to pay our bills. Can you fund the commercial break for like 3 months?
It's
3 months,
investment.
And I think we're going to be okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. Let's take a break and we'll be back.
Do something Brian has never done. Be brief. Follow us on Instagram at The Commercial Break. Text or call us 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. Visit our website, tcbpodcast.com, for all the audio, video, and your free sticker. Then watch all the videos at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak. And finally, share the show. It's the best gift you could give a few aging podcasters. See, Brian? That really wasn't that difficult, now was it? You're welcome.
Attention, attention. Chrissy has something to say.
Well, during the break, I was looking up. I asked Chad to tell me about the black market for art. And it is.
Oh, that's crazy. I just asked Chad to do the same thing. All right, go.
It's a hidden global underground economy where stolen, looted, forged, or illegally traded cultural objects are bought and sold.
Wow.
It's massive. Hard to measure, and is intertwined with organized crime. Here's a clear breakdown of how it works and why it exists, if you want me to get into it. But.
Well, I'll share an anecdote, and then we can break it down. And then if you want to. If you want to read over it?
Forgeries. Yeah, go ahead.
You read into it, and I'll tell you a little anecdote, a personal anecdote. I was married, and when I was married, some of you have listened to the stories. I'm not going to repeat it, but I was married, and one of the my uncle-in-law, I guess is the best way to put it, was running one of the world's most prestigious brands. Now, I'm not going to say it right this second, but you can probably research it and figure it out through the commercial break. He was running one of the world's most prestigious brands, watches, handbags, items, that belts, wallets, that sometimes cost tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's the kind of place where you only find in the high-end malls, if you ever find them in a mall, and you would have to make an appointment to go in and see it, right? Okay, so this guy was running this company, this international company. And while he never talked to me directly, he would talk at someone else when he was talking to me because he didn't like me. I will share that he explained how difficult it is to wrap your head around the problem of stolen merchandise, antiquities, and things that are valuable, this valuable, where a brand puts a label on something and it becomes extraordinarily valuable because that label is on it, and then thieves want to get at it. So first of all, that market. Then second of all, the black market for trading these goods is
billions of dollars a year.
For his company alone was hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's not the world's largest company, but you would want one of their items if you could have one of their items. Let's put it that way. Okay, tell me more about how this stuff gets trafficked throughout the universe.
Well, let's see. So how the black market operates is the supply chain generally looks like this. Thief or looter acquires the piece. Mm-hmm. Middleman smuggles it and hides its origin. Dealer or corrupt expert provides false provenance.
Paperwork.
Yeah. An end buyer acquires it quietly. Often wealthy private collectors, criminals using art to store value, and investors speculating on its future legality.
Mm.
Yeah. Crypto transactions often involve cash, crypto, private sales via encrypted channels, free ports.
Mm-hmm. That's where all the stolen art is. Maybe some of the jewels, too.
Yeah. Who buys it? Not just villains in movies.
No.
Real buyers include collectors who want more rare items without scrutiny. Investors, betting pieces will be legalized later, which I don't know how that works, but
I guess there's some way that you can, like, over generations,
maybe,
you can then claim that you somehow came into.
That's true.
But I would imagine the person who originally owned it would want it back, even if it was generations later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the Jews who got all the, the people in Europe, mm-hmm, who got all of the stuff taken, mm-hmm, from them. You know, they had whole, I think, units dedicated, yeah, to returning art.
Yes. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, and then other people that buy it, criminal organizations using for money laundering.
Mm.
And then people who don't know the art is illegal.
So yeah.
It's a whole thing.
So I have a friend on Facebook. I have a friend. And then we're on Facebook together. And a couple of, mm-hmm, weeks ago, made a post about one of these art collectives where you can buy into the collective
or a piece of art. I've seen that. Uh-huh.
And then as it raises value, it's like stock. You're buying stock in this piece of art. And then as it raises value, your piece of this particular piece of art then raises value and you can trade it in. And if there's supply or demand, all that other stuff. And he had made $10,000 in a little over 3 years. He put in like $1,000. It was worth like his piece of this particular piece of art.
Yeah.
It got traded at Christie's and then the current value was like $12,000.
Wow.
So he made like $10,000 in 3 years. Now, not a ton of money, but what if you had put $100,000?
Yeah, exactly.
And he was $1.2 million. That's a big return on investment. When you 10X your investment,
well, that's
huge.
Art just keeps going up and up and up.
It really does. Listen, art is the new real estate. It's, you know,
mm-hmm,
didn't Snoop Dogg buy a piece of Meta World or something like that?
That's
Remember
right.
He bought a house in Sims or something, didn't he?
Yeah, and, in the Meta World.
Yeah. And I keep on getting these phone calls about buying my house on this. Buying my house on some electronic map or something.
Really?
Yeah, that somebody else was going to buy. And I'm like, okay, I fucking care.
Electronic map.
Yeah, there's a world out there.
Oh.
It's been replicated based on Google Earth. And now you can buy property.
Oh.
You can claim your property. You can buy it. You know, some properties are $10. Some properties are $1,000. And I'm like, the fuck? I'm going to buy my property again online. Cares.
Exactly.
But you know, I had a friend one time who said, listen, URLs are the new real estate.
Right.
And okay, great. So he just went on this buying spree. For years, he was buying all kinds of URLs. He would get a whole list of URLs and he just purchased them whole cloth, mm-hmm, right? You know, $500, he'd buy 5 million URLs or whatever. And then occasionally somebody would come to him and say, I'll pay $1,000 for that or $500 for this or whatever. So I'm trying to do after the break, which is, by the way, I'll explain more about that in the future. But there's one episode out there in case you want to listen to it.
It's a good one.
So maybe it'll just be the one episode podcast, like 18 million other podcasts.
Yeah.
So he buys all these. So I'm trying to do after the pod. And the first thing you think about is, of course, I got to get a website to make sure that people can go to the website. And so I go to find afterthebreak.com,
mm-hmm,
and I find that it is being sat on by a private individual. And so, you know, GoDaddy will contact that person or whatever. And it ends up being a company, like an investment company. So the guy calls me right back. I send him an email. Oh. He calls me like 15 minutes later. He's like, you want to buy afterthebreak.com? I said, yes, I do. But just depends on how much it is. He said, we'll sell it to you for $19,000. And I was like, $19,000? I don't even think the commercial break has made that much money. I'm going to buy it for $19,000. I go, it's for a podcast, man. I'm not going to do
that. Yeah, yeah.
He's like, what if it was $17,000? And I'm like, what if it was $17?
All right. That's more my language.
Yeah. There's probably a reason why you haven't sold after the break yet. And it probably has to do with your $19,000 asking price.
Yeah.
I'm not a Rembrandt. What are you doing? I'm going to put my URL in a free port, lock it up, and keep it humidified. That's not going to happen. Yeah, I mean, listen, art and jewels, it's the fascinating world of the art and jewel heists. I could talk about it all day long. I really could. I've been down the rabbit hole. It was actually going to be an episode of After the Break. So I did a lot of research, as you could clearly hear. I did a lot of research around it.
It is fascinating.
It is fascinating. I mean, we could get into it about Vegas robberies. We could get into it about all kind of different stuff. That's maybe once in a while we'll go into that kind of heisty mode and figure out a
new
heist.
Who doesn't love a good heist story?
Everyone loves a good heist story because done correctly, like the Pink Panthers, it's not the feel-good story of the year, but it's kind of the anti-hero story of the year. I'm not saying that robbing a small mom-and-pop jeweler is a good thing, but these aren't mom-and-pop jewelers. These guys have kabillions of dollars worth of jewels sitting in their room. You know what I want to, like, side note real quick. Try not to get too ADHD here, but there's a guy that's currently on Instagram. He goes into these jewelry shows. Okay, jewelry show. There's 50 jewelers selling
like
all kinds
of conventions,
diamonds, golds. They're kind of like conventions. Mm-hmm. They're shows. You know, they trade usually at wholesale. And he'll go in and he'll take 15 minutes and he'll look at someone's entire case. We're talking millions of dollars worth of shit. And he'll say, I'll buy it for $2.2 million, all of it. And the dealer's like, you're going to buy all of this for $2.2 million? So he makes them a wholesale offer right there without ever doing any investigation except with his eyeball. Sometimes counting, you can see him go through the process, and then he'll just make a purchase of all of these diamonds, gems, emeralds, gold, white gold, all this stuff right off the rip. And it's fucking fascinating. I'm like, damn, dude, you got big balls. He doesn't put that part in the actual Instagram story, so I don't know, but I'm assuming he's a dealer that then goes and sells them wholesale. He is relying on his ability to eyeball something and get a deal, right? And he's hoping that, like all human beings, that by throwing a big number out there, you get fascinated enough to take the offer. Now, it works about 50% of the time. 50% of the time they say yes, 50% of the time they say no, believing that they're getting hoodwinked into something that then they will regret down the line. But
especially if he's filming himself doing it too.
He films himself doing it. I mean, someone else is filming him doing it, but he's got such huge testicles to walk in and just how much money has he lost? How much money has he won? That's the real I want to know. Tell me how much money you're making off of each of these things. Are you actually getting a good deal or are you doing this for views? Are you ultra rich and doing this for views? Which, whatever, either way, you know. Listen, I watched a guy from the UAE one time mail out thousands of dollars worth of American cash to anybody that sent him a TikTok message. I'd love to talk to those people and see if they ever got their TikTok cash. Mm-hmm. And that, my friends, is where the real money is, right there, is
TikTok cash?
Is Saudi Arabia.
Oh, well, yes, the UAE.
The UAE, Saudi Arabia. They're about to buy Paramount Pictures.
What?
They're about to buy Paramount Pictures.
I thought that was just sold, that one guy.
Skydance?
Yeah,
but it's being funded by Saudi Arabia. So welcome to the show, my friends. Welcome
again,
to the show.
Media. Yeah.
Media, that's what it's all about.
Controlling the narrative.
Control the narrative, control the cash, control the world. Mm-hmm. That's what you need to do. And so they're playing their cards and they're playing the long game. I mean, look, they bought LIV Golf. And that certainly, I mean, there's major implications there. Who doesn't want to watch washed up golfers on WB? Well, now they own the WB and LIV Golf. So there you go. It's a grand conspiracy come full circle. All right. Settle down.
That was fun. I love talking about this stuff, too.
I do, too.
Yeah. Reading about it, watching it, talking about it.
I love a good heist movie.
Yeah.
I love a good heist story. And the real stories are so much more fascinating than anything that's on celluloid.
True.
There was
one that was just on Netflix that I watched a little while back, and this little network of people went to the Diamond District up in New York and stole a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Nah, I wouldn't want to fuck with that Diamond District. Those guys look tough.
They do.
Yeah, those guys look tough. There's another guy that's out there that does it. He's in the Diamond District and he's trying to make a name for himself on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So he goes in and he's a negotiator on other people's behalf. So someone will want to sell a watch, like a really nice watch, and he'll go, for $1,000, I'll help you, you know, I'll help you get $6,000 extra on that watch. But I don't know if anyone's told him, but the ones where he fails, he probably shouldn't put them up there because he looks right. like a jerk off. And he fails way more than he wins. And that it might be, you know, it might be rage bait. I'm not really sure, but he's clearly in over his head. Clearly in over his head. 212-433-3TCB, 212-433-3822. Questions, comments, concerns, content ideas. We have a phone again, so there you go. Phone's working one more time. And nice. I bought 286 messages to respond to. I'll get around to them, maybe tonight. Join us on our streaming channel. Not next week. Thanksgiving, we're off. But we're going to be streaming at the commercial break on Instagram, TCB Podcast on Twitch. At the commercial break, I mean, at the commercial break on YouTube, TCB Podcast on Twitch. But at the commercial break on Instagram also is our handle over there. And at the TCB Podcast on TikTok. And TCBpodcast.com. That's where you can find all the audio, all the video, and your free sticker. You want a free sticker? Go to the Contact Us button. Drop down menu says, I want my free sticker. Give us your address and we'll send one to you. What else? What else is there to say? It's been a fun episode.
It has.
And why not? We'll do it again. Da-dun, da-dun, so anybody da-dun, that's, anybody da-dun, that's interested da-dun, da-dun, in watching, give us 15
minutes. Henry Mancini.
There you go. Give us 15 minutes and we'll come back. YouTube.com/thecommercialbreak. All right, Chrissy, that's all I can do for now.
I think so.
I love you. Best to you.
Best to you.
Best to you out there in the podcast universe. Until next time, Chrissy and I will say, we do say, and we must say,
goodbye.
Get out.